the Ocean Park Community Podcast, bringing you the history of our neighborhood through stories from residents. You're listening to part two, Trains. We're joined by Pete, Ed, and Don. In this episode, we'll discuss just how important the railways were to Ocean Park residents.
My recollections of the train and of the beach, it was a gathering place, like in the early 40s and the mid 40s, getting around to transportation and getting around to mail and things like that. Our mail used to come in a big sack on the train, and there was two posts down there, and one post had an arm out. The postmaster in the rail car would have the bag hanging on a hook on the side of the rail car, and as the train passed this post beside the railroad track, that arm would grab the bag and spin it into the little station.
I don't think the train stopped.
No, it just kept going. And the next post that was up there, and which you can see in the pictures of Ocean Park with the steam engines, had the outgoing mail in a big bag, and the arm in this rail car grabbed it and slammed it inside the rail car.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And old Reverend Hughes, who was the postmaster, we would then help him carry this single or two mail bags up the hill to 126A and 16th, which in those days were Ocean Park and North Bluff Road, the corner to the little post office there, and drop off the mailbags.
Yeah. It was the smallest post office in the world. It is.
So there was an actual station. Where were the stations for the train?
Right, by the Trestle Rock.
There was a White Rock station.
Yes.
Then an Ocean Park station.
And Crescent.
And then a Crescent Beach. Station.
Yeah.
Crescent had a big... quite a big building for a station, but it was sort of open, as I recall. Yeah.
And it received freight as well.
Yeah.
Ocean Park did not. Yeah. Right where you cross the tracks on the left-hand side.
You know where that little park is?
Okay.
Just
that little park was where the train...
Yeah. On the left-hand side, going down.
I got pictures.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. But that was a bigger station. So Ocean Park was really just a little station then, was it? Like a little hut station?
It was like a kiosk. It didn't really have a station. We had they built a changing house for us down at Ocean Park Beach, and they built somebody built a little homemade, it was an actual cabin with a roof on it, but it was very small.
Three walls.
I slept in it one night. Yeah.
Oh, that's the one on the beach.
The one on the beach.
Yeah.
And those are the only two that I remember. But then the slides came down and tore out the changing house. So that was that.
Yeah.
And they never got rebuilt.
So that was the Great Northern then. So they didn't own the stations then.
No, it would. That station was put up under duress. We'll use that word.
Yeah.
The Great Northern did not want to stop on Ocean Park. They did not want even a whistle stop. They didn't want the mail. And their track foreman was a fellow by the name of George Giblin.
Yeah.
And 15th Avenue is Giblin Road.
Yeah.
And old Gibby, his house was one of the first houses in the Ocean Park area. He retired out here after the First World War. He went to the local association of all the people and one summer day and said, I'm going on holidays for 2 weeks. When he got back, lo and behold, a little shack was built beside the railroad track, and that became the Ocean Park station. They had a sign on it, Ocean Park. So now the Burlington Northern had no way of backing out. They had to stop, because if you're going to run a railroad in Canada in the early days, a whistle stop or a flag stop meant somebody could blow a whistle beside the track and the train would stop, or they'd wave a flag and they had to stop, pick them up. So that's how we got our station.
Yeah.
And that was down by...
Right at the trestle.
Just south of the trestle. Yeah. There was actually a road going up from the trestle all the way up to 1001 steps where it starts. Mm-hmm. And we used to race our...
Well, I'm trying to remember. The changing house and the one I slept in, was there another one than that?
There was one on the waterfront. It was the one you slept on.
That's the one I'm talking about.
Yeah, that would be built in probably the 1910s or something.
Yeah, but were there three or two?
Three.
Three buildings.
Yeah.
Okay.
It was no bigger than the bus stop over here by the bank.
That's all. That's what it was like.
It
had sides, three sides, and then it had inside. It had benches going all the way around.
That's the station you're talking about.
Pardon me.
Was it just for dropping off and picking up mail, or was it also?
Or if you were going to get the train, you would sit there and then you wave like that.
No, the mail was on that hook.
Yeah. And that little hut down there, somebody said that Reverend Hughes used to go in there when it was raining.
Mm-hmm. That's correct, yeah.
Wait for the mail.
Probably did.
Yeah.
So the trains went from Seattle to Vancouver, and it was also a commuter train from Ocean Park to Vancouver. Is that correct?
In the early years.
It is, yeah. I think the girls and boys from United Church used to come out there, and then they'd go up the path and then walk down to Comayas Point. And then... they'd only come out, a bunch of boys would come out, and then two or three weeks later, a bunch of girls would come out, and the boys would go back, and they'd all be able to get there. And people that even came to Ocean Park just for go shopping or something. I know my mom and I, we caught on, and we went to New Westminster, and she went shopping, and then we came back.
Ed, do you want to tell them why, we keep speaking of the trestle?
Oh, yeah.
Tell them why the trestle is there at the beach.
Well, the trestle there was at the beach because of originally the property was owned by Ben Stevenson. The railroad wanted his land so they could build the train continuously, the track. So he says, well, if you're going to build a track, you will have to build it. So you'll have to build a trestle there so that I can go under there, my girls can go for a swim in safety, access to the beach.
Yeah.
Plus, he had a logging business, I think.
Yeah, a lumber business, yeah.
And he used to put, there is a full...
groins, old pilings.
Old pilings, like in the early days. And it was all made flat at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, he had a barge that it would sink mm-hmm. when the tide would go out. And then when the tide go out, he'd load all his logs on. And then the tide would come in and raise the logs and the barge, and then pull it away and go and deliver the logs.
To the sawmill.
So the sawmill.
Oh, my gosh. So that's how the trestle came.
That's how, and the trestle was just, it didn't really need a trestle there because it was all flat, right?
Because the Great Northern Railroad in the early days crossed the border about midway through the town of Blaine, and it came up into South Surrey in the Hazelmere area, right across what is now 16th Avenue at about 180th or 181, and it crossed across the bottom of Redwood Park, and then crossed over 184th, going east,
uh-huh.
and then it started swinging northwest, and it came across the head of land there, and it came out at 176 and 32nd Avenue, and it paralleled 176th right to Cloverdale. And then in Cloverdale, it swung to the west towards Ladner and whatnot, and then around to New Westminster. It was in the early 1900s, 06 or 08, that the railroad then changed from that route to along the bluff from Blaine to White Rock to Ocean Park to Crescent Beach, and then across the head of the flats to by the Dease Thruway,
mm-hmm.
what we now know as the Dease Thruway, mm-hmm. and then back over to the old railroad and then into New Westminster. So that's how these things came about. Because the railroad in those days was the major form of transportation between the city of Vancouver and the city of Seattle. So that was the reason for the railroad being in there. And it was built, I believe, one of the men that was behind it was a man by the name of Sam Hill. And he was quite an entrepreneur in the United States. I believe he had a lot to do with the Seattle City Light. And if I'm not mistaken, he had a lot to do with building the actual Peace Arch at the border.
Oh.
Because in the 1920s, I believe when the Peace Arch was built, the children in the schools here all contributed a nickel or a dime, if they could afford it, towards building the Peace Arch, and their names are put in a capsule inside the Peace Arch.
I used to work 5.5 days, and I'd finish about 11 o'clock in the morning in Vancouver, and I'd walk from the Sun Tower across the old Georgia Viaduct down to Maine and Terminal, and catch the train at 11:45, and then I'd come home, and I'd get off at White Rock. I couldn't get off at Ocean Park at that time because they'd already taken the station away.
And what year had they taken the station away, do you think?
In the 50s, probably.
Yeah, in the 50s, yeah.
For what reason did they take it away?
Well, they didn't want it to stop.
Yes.
Yeah.
Nuisance?
Yeah, nuisance. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Don, do you remember using the train to come home from the theater in White Rock on Saturday afternoon?
No, I don't recall that, but I remember walking from Ocean Park to Blaine to see a movie.
Yeah.
When they had movies down there for...
Yeah.
Kids.
Yeah.
They're back. We didn't think anything of walking that far.
Well, we used to just pedal our bicycles there, say on a Saturday. Mm-hmm. All the kids would get together and we'd go across and we'd buy some little trinkets or something at Blaine and come home, you know.
Yeah. Did you use the train at all to commute around?
No.
Not much?
No, not at all, really. No. I can't recall ever being on it.
Okay.
Yeah, is that right? Oh, I thought you, yeah. Because I can remember we would run from the theater in White Rock on Saturday afternoon and get down to the station, and I think it cost us 25 or 35 cents. And they would all make us ride in the last passenger car, which had a big railing out the back, and the conductor would stay with us, and then he'd have to stop the train at Ocean Park and kick us all off.
Yeah. I think I walked down to that show, too.
Yeah. Well, once again, shortly after the war, things weren't that mobile out here, and we used to get our mail delivered by the Great Northern Train, and the Great Northern Train ran from Vancouver to Seattle and Seattle to Vancouver daily. There would be at least one train either way, depending on the amount of freight or passengers. So now at the little three-walled station down in Ocean Park, the postmaster would wait down there and he would have the outgoing mail in a great big canvas sack, or he might have two canvas sacks. So we kids would help him haul this stuff up and down the hill.
This is Reverend Hughes?
Reverend Hughes, yes. For the mail coming from Vancouver, there would be a post beside the railroad tracks that had an arm on it. The old baggage car on the train had an arm on it with this incoming mail hanging in this bag.
Yeah.
And the bag beside the track would grab the mail bag off the rail car. And then as the train passed the station, the postmaster would be waiting and that arm would still be sticking out and the outgoing mail would be on the other post and the arm in the rail car would grab the bag on the post beside the tracks and swing it into the rail car.
So mail delivery and pickup happened.
That's correct.
And the train doesn't stop.
While the train was moving.
Yeah.
I think it slowed down a bit, but not much. Yeah.
In the early days, before we have the communications that we have today, the telegraph lines would follow the railroad tracks across North America, north and south, east and west, and that's how they communicated by... in those days, Morse code. And at each major station, they would have what they called a telegrapher.
Yeah.
And he would have to do dot, 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 dash, and things like this. Yeah, Morse code. So that's how they transmitted that. And in 1947 or 48, my brother Rob and I were sitting on the beach, and there was a major earthquake along the Pacific coast here. And I'm guessing at the years, I think that's when it was. But my brother and I were sitting on a log, and this log started to bounce up and down, and my brother gave me heck for it. He said, Pete, quit doing that. And it wasn't me. And when we turned and looked down the tracks, just as we looked, all of these telegraph poles probably leaned over about 15 to 20 degrees, all of them, and along the line from the motion of the earthquake and the not-too-stable soil. They stayed that way till they were removed.
Yeah,
I would say in the 60s or... before they removed the telegraph.
They were right on the water side of the railroad track, and they were just barely there.
Yeah.
And the track, it was funny because they used to hum. You could there was something, yeah. the current was running through them, yeah. And when you're on the beach, you could hear, mm.
Yeah, you could hear the humming. Yeah, either the wind or the current run, something
the
running.
The current was, maybe yeah. the wind was doing it,
yeah.
But it would, they'd just hum, you know.
Those poles were very useful to us as teenagers. because, and we were very upset when they took them out. Because they were very useful. We, as mid-teens, used to walk all over Ocean Park with shotguns. You would not do that today.
No.
And we used to shoot ducks and pheasants, and when we were down at the beach, the telephone poles were very useful because you could look down the track and see how many telephone poles the ducks were sitting at in the water. And so you'd sneak down the ditch side, count the number of telephone poles, quickly pop up over the top and blast the ducks.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
That was upsetting.
Yeah. The last of the green piecers.
Oh my gosh. Oh, well.
And there's also Giblin, who was mentioned earlier.
George Giblin.
He was a security man for the railroad, and he would go on a little thing called a speeder. And he would start at Crescent Beach and go along to Ocean Park to White Rock because there was a lot of landslides. So his job was to warn the oncoming trains to look out for the landslides. Mm-hmm. So anyway, this little thing was a little flat deck, only about 8 by 12 or 8. Yeah, I mean 8 by 4.
Yeah.
Yeah, small thing with a lawnmower motor on it and a little tin cap on it and four wheels and
yeah,
it went on the track.
Train wheels. Yeah.
And it was gauged for the train tracks.
Right.
So what the idea is was when the train would come or when he'd get to the end or off, he'd be able to, there were certain stations for him to take this thing off. And it was two little like tracks that were made out of railroad ties. Mm-hmm. So then he would pull it out, these 2x4s out from underneath the
speeder.
The speeder. Mm-hmm. And it was like a wheelbarrow. Mm-hmm. He'd lift it up and turn it and put it onto this track to get out of the way of the train. Well, one day he must have been a little late and the train was coming and my brother-in-law was on, Bernard was on the beach with my wife and a train came by and hit the speeder and it went flying all over the beach and luckily the fellow was able to get off.
Oh my gosh, so it destroyed the speeder?
Oh yeah, yeah. Yeah, I guess.
Yeah. But no one was hurt?
No,
yeah.
No one
was hurt. And that was in the days of the steam engines. When the diesel engines came along, they also modernized looking for slides. They put wires on the ditch side of the tracks between the bluff and the tracks and along the ditch.
Mm-hmm.
And if a slide came down, it would break this wire, which would break the communication systems, and then it would put a red light on at the different places for the train so they would know that ahead of them there was a slide on the track, so they wouldn't proceed until someone came and checked the tracks.
And there was trains would get onto the beach. I witnessed at least two trains, the engine and everything on the beach.
What happened?
Well, the train would hit the slide
and derail,
turn off into the
the whole thing's on the beach.
The whole thing was on the beach, steaming away and
One of the major wrecks they had down when we keep talking about the United Church Camp, that's at the foot of the south foot of 128th or Stevenson Road.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
One of the trains that went off there are pictures locally, maybe even in this library, of the baggage car and one of the tracks, the actual steel track that got knocked loose by the slide, was right up through the floor of the rail car and up out through the roof. Yeah, and it's quite evident in the picture of it. It would be the late 40s, early 50s?
Yeah, somewhere around there.
Yeah.
Airboats. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there would be animals hit by the train as well. You know, they had a cattle thing on the front, which was just a scoop-like thing, but it never helped that much. Oh. We'd find dead deer on the beach and animals and stuff like that.
Yeah, local dogs or whatever
dogs.
That didn't get out of the way.
There was a plane crash down the beach one time, wasn't there?
It may have been when I was away. I know there was one in the, up the river from Neckham. There was one up from the train bridge at Crescent. But if there was one on the beach here, like I was away from 19...
Well, I'm not sure. I
53 to 57,
I could be wrong on that,
58,
you know,
yeah.
But I thought there was something...
it's possible,
somebody
yeah.
said there was a train. Yeah. Well, the train would go by the foot of...
148th or Oxford?
Oxford, it was beyond... It was a little bit... south of Oxford.
You're talking about the underpass?
Yeah, the underpass.
Yeah.
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 The underpass was a little bit, it was like a tunnel. And when the flood came to White Rock, but they had filled it in, so that's why the water didn't escape so much.
That was in the late 1990s.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because in the early days, so that you had access to the beach, when they built the railroad through, they built an underpass under there that the people could walk under. In fact, you could get the old-style truck under there to get wood off the beach, whatever you wanted to do.
Yeah.
But it also allowed the drain water off of the hill to escape from the... Now that the railroad had built up like a dike along the front, so now that the water that came down there that would normally flow into the ocean... would now pool up, so they had to have this underpass for the water to carry on out into the ocean. So
that was
before they had the proper drains and everything built.
Yeah.
Like that.
The area where the train was, there was a little, it was double wide beyond that point towards Blaine, like towards, to the south of Oxford and north. No, that's going...
It would be east. It would be east. Southeast of Oxford.
Go all that way. Well, there was two lines there. One was a spur line where the steam train would pull over and it'd load up with coal and water, and then it would go away. You know. So now they've eliminated that with...
the diesel train.
Diesel-electric trains, and then they didn't need that spur line.
Right. See, about the time the diesel trains appeared... transportation over road was much better here.
Oh, yeah.
The trucking systems and things like that. There was a lot of small trucking firms, like a one man, he would have a truck and he would deliver from here to New Westminster, Vancouver, whatever. And when the BC Electric started getting bigger, larger and larger, they had their own trucking firm for whatever reason. And the BC Electric... I know they bought up, my grandfather had a truck line out of Elgin, and he started that in about 1918, 1919. Well, they bought his license. They bought his, what they call a condition of license or reason to operate, and along with a whole bunch of other small trucking firms out here. So transportation went from being horse and buggy to gasoline and diesel powered, stuff like that.
Yeah.
That was it.
Yeah.
Really.
Yeah.
That in the ballpark.
Yeah.
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 So, but with the train, it seems like it's a pretty central piece of the Ocean Park history.
Yeah, well, most of the houses and everything, the population wasn't very big because the population would grow in the summertime. So people would come out on the train, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because that was only transportation. Or if they drove, it was some distance, you know. The roads were poor.
I don't know that it was one of the most important parts of Ocean Park history, but...
what do you think was?
Dawn.
Yeah. Yes.
Well,
yes.
I think
it's the people.
I think the most important part is the lifestyle that we could live at that time out here.
Yeah.
And the types of things that we were able to do with what was in the immediate area.
Right.
It's so different from being in the city.